Hello everyone. So I know that you're wondering, well, Antonio, what is your final verdict that you're rendering on the sex surrogate partner therapy aspect of life? Well, I decided to do it in a different way. I'm a person that is sensitized to ethics related concerns, legality related concerns. Even though the sex surrogate partner therapy world has not received a mass amount of prosecutions, incarcerations, fines, arrests, indictments, criminal charges being filed, civil charges being filed, the police being called, the intelligence community and the federal government coming after folks and arraignments and fingerprints, as well as mugshots. Even though that world has been spared those things, I still want to be able to do sex surrogate partner therapy without the typical way it's done, where it's sex surrogate partner and the client. I decided there's a way it can be done without fear of running afoul of the law, because when you have trained professional support with consenting adults, then many people say it's not illegal, it's not law breaking, it's not a felony, it's not a misdemeanor. You're still law abiding as long as you have the trained professional help with the consenting adults involved, especially if it's a recommendation by other trained professionals and you have trained professionals helping out clients. There's clinical supervision, and you have the trained professional partner, sex surrogate partner, then many law enforcement people will say, well, this is not prostitution. This is not thievery. This is not robbery. This is not burglary. This is not brothel work. So many people in the law world don't care. They know that exists. They just don't care. Well, you have some people going, but if you are a sex surrogate partner and you're being sexually therapeutic, sensually therapeutic, rock therapeutic, and there's compensation, financially speaking, involved, isn't that the same as prostitution work, brothel work? Isn't that a form of thievery, burglary, robbery? So it's sex surrogate partner therapy is a divisive issue. Some people in the law go, well, we feel like it's wrong, but we don't have any precedent to go after people because it's never truly been dealt with in society. A lot of people don't know that it exists. Go figure. Then you have some law enforcement people go, but you're going to prosecute someone for improving their body image, overcoming sexual performance anxiety, and being victorious over erotic related traumas, that's preposterous. That's how a lot of people in law enforcement feel. So the issue's never been fully settled. So because of that, that's why I love the sex surrogate partner therapy idea. I just want to do it in a way where it can't be divisive over how I do it, because this is how I would do it. It would be me, sex therapist, sexologist, intimacy coordinators, intimacy choreographers, intimacy coaches, intimacy directors, intimacy professionals, sex work therapists, sexperts, you know, like dating coaches, couples counselors, ethical monogamy trained professionals, marriage and family therapists, and pleasure coaches, eroticism coaches, sex coaches. We would all band together to do tutorials. Our tutorials would be in the form of basically everything they do in sex surrogate partner therapy. We would do it in tutorial form. We would outline terminology, phrases, and what we would do is, it's like, some people we would use rightly, they would not be like real people, but it could be simulated as if they're real people. It's like stunt doubles, right? Or doppelgangers. You know, it could be you look like a human, but you're not human. But you look so human, nobody could tell. So it's us having humanoids that look so human you can't tell, acting out these things. Acting out body mapping, acting out breath work, acting out caressing of the gentle nature type of caressing, acting out compassionate touch, acting out smooth rubbing, acting out in the middle strength grabbing, acting out generous but firm grasping, acting out gazing at one another lovingly, G-A-Z-I-N-G, acting out peaceful proximity, acting out soothing clothing removal, you know, acting out neighborly negotiation of caring consent, and etc. And for some in the sex surrogate partner therapy world, full-blown sex is the last thing that happens, in certain cases, not all. So we would have that. Some people learn best that way. Other people, we would use actual people to do these things. And we would be the ones narrating, putting in the tips, pausing, and rewinding, and showing the right way to do these things and also warning people the wrong way to do these things. So it's similar to people having research participants whenever they are doing humongous projects of the scholarly nature. It would be the same way with sex surrogate partner therapy. It's using people to give us examples of kind-hearted whispering, right? And of being nice about fingertip expressing being heartfelt about gliding and riding and striving and thriving and striding and touching heads and holding hands and being inside each other's personal space and hugging and kissing. For some, it's sex acts exposition. So we would be the ones telling people what should happen and shouldn't happen, and teaching the importance of innate naturalness too. So that's a way that we can do sex surrogate partner therapy. That way is basically teaching people that sexuality, sensuality, and eroticism, and the interpersonal romance for an extrovert is going to be different for an ambivert, an introvert, an omnivert. And we want to show diverse sensuality, diverse sex, diverse sexuality, diverse eroticism. So I figured that's a clever, creative way of doing sex surrogate partner therapy without being frightened by law enforcement. I figured that's the best way because there is no power dynamic concerns of when it comes to, you know, those who oppose sex surrogate partner therapy. They can't attach that to us because all the participants, there is no one being authority figures over anybody. It's myself as an intimacy professional with other intimacy professionals, and we're just outlining what is happening. And it's something that I think, well, actually, I know that even anti-sex work feminists can get behind. Those who are anti-porn feminists, they can get behind what we're doing because they don't have to worry about porn categories they dislike. They don't have to worry about porn language they can't stand. They don't have to worry about economic exploitation that they revile, and they don't have to worry about dehumanization, objectification, because that none of those things happen in sex surrogate partner therapies. I'm introducing it to a global stage. Like, okay, everybody can enjoy. I love how they converse with each other. I love how they're slow to speak. They think before they speak. They're slow to emotions. They're not quick to lash out. And they listen more than talk. I like how sometimes they write more than they talk. Or sometimes, wow, they talk more than they write, but it's as good as if they write more than talk. Both are forms of talking. And they listen more than talk, and they listen more than write. And when they write and talk, the act of listening skills just gives it away. So this is what I want people to understand, right? That basically we're teaching life skills within sensuality, sexuality, eroticism, and sex. For example, sensory-friendly attitudes, survivor-friendly attitudes, sensory-friendly emotional intelligence, survivor-friendly emotional intelligence, sensory-friendly emotional literacy, survivor-friendly emotional literacy, sensory-friendly emotional self-regulation, survivor-friendly emotional self-regulation, sensory-friendly gelatology, survivor-friendly gelatology, sensory-friendly hope theory, survivor-friendly hope theory, sensory-friendly impermanence, survivor-friendly impermanence, sensory-friendly kindness, survivor-friendly kindness, sensory-friendly empathy, survivor-friendly empathy, sensory-friendly life skills-based education, survivor-friendly life skills-based education, sensory-friendly moral development, survivor-friendly moral development, sensory-friendly people skills, survivor-friendly people skills, sensory-friendly personal boundaries, survivor-friendly personal boundaries, sensory-friendly positive psychology, survivor-friendly positive psychology, sensory-friendly ruler, survivor-friendly ruler. So the acronym RULER refers to the five key emotion skills of recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating sensory-friendly emotions. The acronym RULER refers to the five key emotion skills of recognizing, understanding, labeling, expressing, and regulating survivor-friendly emotions. Sensory-friendly social intelligence, survivor-friendly social intelligence. Sensory-friendly social skills, survivor-friendly social skills. Sensory-friendly soft skills, survivor-friendly soft skills. Sensory-friendly study skills, survivor-friendly study skills. Sensory-friendly multiple intelligences, survivor-friendly multiple intelligences. Sensory-friendly vocational skills, survivor-friendly vocational skills. Sensory-friendly decision-making, survivor-friendly decision-making. Sensory-friendly problem-solving, survivor-friendly problem-solving. Sensory-friendly conflict resolution, survivor-friendly conflict resolution. You got sensory-friendly creative thinking, survivor-friendly creative thinking. Sensory-friendly lateral thinking, survivor-friendly lateral thinking. Sensory-friendly critical thinking, survivor-friendly critical thinking. Sensory-friendly communication, survivor-friendly communication. Sensory-friendly interpersonal skills, survivor-friendly interpersonal skills. Sensory-friendly self-awareness, survivor-friendly self-awareness. Sensory-friendly empathy, survivor-friendly empathy. Sensory-friendly assertiveness, survivor-friendly assertiveness. Sensory-friendly equanimity, survivor-friendly equanimity. Sensory-friendly resilience, survivor-friendly resilience. Sensory-friendly coping with emotions and coping with stress, survivor-friendly coping with emotions and coping with stress. Sensory-friendly emotional management, survivor-friendly emotional management. Sensory-friendly literacy, survivor-friendly literacy. Sensory-friendly numeracy, survivor-friendly numeracy. Sensory-friendly humor, survivor-friendly humor. Sensory-friendly personal development, survivor-friendly personal development. Sensory-friendly lifelong learning, survivor-friendly lifelong learning. Sensory-friendly transversal skills, survivor-friendly transversal skills. And don't get me wrong, I love the typical version of sex surrogate partner therapy. Even if it was considered fully legal, fully good, I still would do it the atypical way, which I described to you earlier, because I feel like it would be much easier to intellectually digest, right? The concept, because I feel that it's easier to defend it the way I would like to do it. And it's really meant to portray artful sensuality, artful sexuality, artful eroticism, artful romance, artful interpersonal. And I think that that needs to be exhibited, shown, because usually people don't get to see that. They don't get to witness that. And I still also have this feeling that the way I would like to do it this way, it's much easier to convince people of the loveliness of this idea, because also no one can say that that we're playing mind games or misleading somebody or toying somebody's feelings. Don't get me wrong, most people in sex surrogate partner therapy world usually don't catch feelings. People know the professional drill and everyone's all right with that, so that's fine. I just wanted to make that clear. I thought about it this way also for this last reason. When you have a broader audience of people that normally would be quite partisan when it comes to the feminist sex wars, for example, they wouldn't be able to have a feminist sex war when it comes to what I'm proposing, because whether you're monogamous, whether you're non-monogamous, whether you have marital sex only, whether you go from fornication or premarital all the way to marital, or you just fornicate and premarital, every type of sexual community can honestly look at what I'm proposing and go, okay, that resonates with me. I can apply that to my monogamy. I can apply that to my non-monogamy. And it's not about trying to get people to be a certain sexual way. That's the whole thing about it. To be honest, it's really about we're giving you ideas that you can utilize and put your spin to it. So what I'm doing is I'm doing my best to showcase artful nudity, artfully fully clothed, artfully half nude, without stimulating the feminist sex wars, which are still raging in our modern time. It's not the 1980s, 1990s anymore, and it's not even 2000s anymore. It's not even 2010s anymore. But in 2020s decade that we're living in, the feminist sex wars just keep battlefielding each other. And what I decided to do is create like a third option instead of, well, I'm pro this way sexually, I'm anti that sexually, and I'm like, well, there's a third option. Let's have a sexuality that's not monolithic. Let's have a sexuality that you get to decide what your sexuality expressions are going to be like. Let's honor everybody's sexual rights. You have the right not to sexually do this. You have the right to sexually do that. My third option is this. Let us be... Let us honor everyone when it comes to sex, sexuality, eroticism, interpersonal romance, etc. And let's not have these sexual morality contests. Let's not have these erotic morality contests. Let's not have these sensual morality contests. Instead, here's the full third option I'm proposing. When you're in the human rights world like I am, we're not moralists. We're not sexual moralists either, believe it or not. We assess people with their permission, of course, enthusiastic permission, go, okay, so sexually, what are you like without being busybodies and nosy? And they tell us what they're like, and we help them to sexually be who and what they are, as long as everybody's honored. The only time we become sexual moralists in a sense is if crimes are being committed. That's about it. Other than that, you know, we're just big on not having sexual human rights violations. We're big on not having erotic rights violations or rights violations, you know. If you're going to be sexual, make sure that you don't violate sexual civil rights, sexual political rights, sexual economic rights, sexual cultural rights, sexual social rights, sexual human rights. No. Sexual civil rights is just no, right? And then what I'm also proposing is that this can be easily protect kids from. Because I'll definitely work with professionals who are masterful at helping content creators like this adult content creating and proposing to keep this material from children. You know, make sure that the labels, stickers, the product is something that only adults consume. It's like sexual literacy, erotic literacy, sensual literacy, and proposing and all this too for the adults. So I thought about it and I said, well, I don't want to engage in the divisiveness of sex surrogate partner therapy. What I want to do is present sex surrogate partner therapy in tutorial form, where you get the visual learning style need met, the auditory learning style need met, the tactile learning style need met, and the kinesthetic learning style need met. So those are important. I think that's why it's so important to recognize that I don't want my sexual ways of behaving to contribute to feminist sex wars, because I found a middle ground, because I can acknowledge all the human rights violations that are within the sex industry. That is one of the few things that people on either perspective of the feminist sex wars can agree on. I can agree that there's a commodification issue. But I can also agree that sex work has not been traumatic for everyone. I'm not downplaying the traumas, because sex work has been traumatic for some people. And I want to acknowledge that, yes, forced and voluntary sex work is wrong. That's something that even pro-sex work feminists can agree on. But I feel like not all voluntary, on-purpose sex work has been traumatic. For some people, yes, but for other people, no. So I'm very gray area in my thinking. Like, well, there's a way that sex can happen without slavery nor trafficking, and if that is some people's reality, not everybody's reality, but some people's reality. So I decided this is a way of a way of healthily appealing to the feminist sex wars in terms of either side of the aisle. And I decided this is the best way to go about sex surrogate partner therapy. And thank you very much kindly for understanding what I'm talking about. So, yes, I do want to say that when it comes to the world of intimacy professionalism, that there are going to be, within the realm of legality, meaning that each person from each of these sex work roles is going to be completely legal. So my intimacy professionalism and my sex surrogate partner therapy expertise will be in high demand by those within webcam modeling, pornographic modeling, adult content subscription services, strippers, naked butlers, pole dancing, phone sex operators, erotic dancing, erotic massage, pornographic film acting, peep show performers, escort services, girlfriend experience, boyfriend experience, sugaring, street prostitution, indoor prostitution, brothel work, massage parlor, leather prostitution, bar, casino prostitution, dominatrix, right? So I will be in high demand in those worlds. And the wisdom in me will dictate how I deal with them respectfully. In other words, they may want to engage in recreational enjoyment, aesthetic pleasure with me. These sexual services, when they have sex with me, receiving the sexual services. I'm the type of person, if I feel right about something, knowing that none of our lives will be fucked up as a result, I go for it. If I feel like our lives will be fucked up as a result of that, then I don't go for that. Hall & Oates reference. But that's how I really feel. I'm the type of person that I also consult veterans within intimacy professional world, sex surrogate therapy partner world. And if there's more pros than cons, I proceed. There's more cons than pros, it's a no-go. I wouldn't be surprised if they go, well, Antonio, since you're being professional when it comes to something personal, I trust your judgment. You're very well adjusted, very well unified, very well rounded, and very well balanced. If that's something you want to do, go hither. But if your instincts are saying otherwise, don't. You know, they would tell me, you know, trust your instincts and obey it. Trust your intuition and obey it. And trust your heart, your head, and your gut and obey that. So the wisdom on the inside will dictate what I do on the outside. So that's the kind of sexual surrogate I am. Next, I'll be in high demand by can-can, cage dance, go-go dance, hoochie-coochie, mattress exercise, striptease, exotic dancers, erotic dancers, pole dance, bubble dance, fan dance, gown and glove, striptease, lap dance, couch dance, contact dance, limo lap dance, dance of the seven veils, table dance, grinding, near burlesque, and twerking. So in terms of bringing intimacy, professionalism, the sex surrogate partner therapy realm to them, including rock dances, exotic dances, what have you. And what if they're like, Antonio, we want you to have recreational enjoyment with us, aesthetic pleasure with us, you know, you receive our sexual services and you can have sex with us, da da da. I will say this. I am the kind of person, and I mean this from my heart, I believe in, actually what I know, I study everyone. I study characters. I study how people carry themselves. A lot of times the vibe is enough. And the vibes will tell you what I should and shouldn't be doing. So it depends on what type of vibes they give me. And the vibes have to be genuine. And, you know, and Antonio, your intimacy, professionalism, and sex surrogate partner therapy expertise will be high demand by nudist resorts, naturist camps, LGBT quad plus naturism, naturist magazines, nude beaches, nude swimming classes, naked yoga, you know, naked parties, nude weddings, nude beaches, clothing optional events, nude art, nude modeling art, fine art, nude photography, nudity live performance, body nude paintings, nudity in film, nudity in television, nudity in music videos, nudity in print media, nudity in advertising, nude photography, glamour photography, erotic photography, softcore pornography, hardcore pornography, nude calendars. Nudity clauses. New celebrity media film screenshots. Nude photo shoots. Sex tapes. Photos and videos released online by recipients consensually. So, you know, And when I say naked parties, I mean adults in my age bracket, okay, and older. And those a little bit younger than me, slightly. How would you go about aesthetic pleasure, recreational enjoyment, and them wanting to be sexual with you? Honestly, for myself, I would feel, I would feel a sense of peace about it, because I have veterans to help me, wise people, and I'm a wise person, so, living above reproach sexually, romantically, interpersonally, aesthetically, recreationally, financially, professionally, personally, psychologically, intellectually, emotionally, academically, circumstantially, crisis-wise, conflict-wise, unconditionally, will all work out well for me. And yes, toplessness, top freedom. We'll get my intimacy, professionalism, and sex are a good partner. Therapy experiences, myself, and I'll say this. I study verbal communication, nonverbal communication, so I let me know if I should have skin-to-skin contact with them or lack thereof. I don't apply the term more cushion for the pushing to all women because not all women appreciate that term. Some do and some don't. So we have to remember that all terms can't be applicable or equally applicable to everyone. Phrases included, because everyone likes to be addressed differently, diversely. What I've noticed in the world of sex, it could be on camera, off camera, not everyone likes the word dick. Not everyone likes the word pussy. Not everyone likes the word titties. Not everyone likes the word clit. Not everyone likes the word ball, so we can't use these words describing everyone's body's genitalia and body parts. Not everyone likes the word ass. Not everyone likes the word fuck. Not everyone likes the word shit. Not everyone likes the word damn. Not everyone likes the word bitch. I'm just being real. We have to say these words because, not to say them just to say them, but so we can have a language sensitivity. You can't use these words when it comes to every person that you talk to. You can't apply these words to everyone because everyone has different sensitivities, diverse sensitivities. Like, I don't apply the word piss when it comes to everyone, or when it comes to talking to every person I talk to. I don't use the word piss when it comes to every person. Like, some people, this is the truth. Some people, you can't even say bastard around them. Some do, yes. Others do not. You can't say cunt when it comes to everybody. You can't. And I think it's important for us to be honest about said things. And I just say these words because I'm putting in context to describe how we have to be mindful how everyone is different. Like the R word. Retarded. Can't say that to everybody. And some of these words, can't be put in jokes when it comes to every person. And I put these words in the proper context to show that I always do that when I apply these words. I respect people enough to say, hey, be mindful of your language when you're talking to every person. So no one can get mad when I say these words, because I'm like, not everybody likes these words. I'm just telling the truth. The appropriate times to say these words, and as long as you put wisdom behind the context, making the words appropriate, meaning it's for language sensitivity purposes, for human sensitivity purposes. It's like, I'll give you other examples. You can't call everybody cracker. Can't call everybody nigga. You just can't. Because we have to be sensitive to the history of racism and to the other words I just used. We have to be sensitive to the history of misogyny, the history of scientific racism, the history of sexual slavery, the history of human abuse, the history of misandry, the history of ableism, disability discrimination, and we have to be sensitized to the history of verbal abuse, we have to be sensitive to the history of emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, intellectual abuse, psychological abuse, academic abuse, workplace abuse, economic abuse, civil and political abuses, social and cultural abuses, and human abuses. So, and discriminatory abuse, that too. So, notice I put all these words in the proper context. So, even when it comes to sex, we have to be mindful that some people like socially offensive, vulgar, profanity talk that's obscene. But there are some people that don't like such linguistics when it comes to sex. And that's the truth. And that's something that the porn world and the erotic world should think about such things, but more importantly, implement the wisdom of what I said about such things. Like, some people don't like the word hell, and some people do. And so, my message to the porn and erotica community is language sensitivity should be applied correctly to all performers in all love scenes, in all adult cinema environments, at all erotic central times. So, XXX audiences can go, wow, when it comes to sex, I need to have sensibilities towards linguistics. And that's how it carries over to nonverbal communication sensitivities. So you have sensibility towards your body language, your facial expressions, your gestures as well.